Marvel's Daredevil, Episode 7, Stick is over, but stick around because we have a show for you today. Schwarzenegger voice, right off the bat.
Yeah, did you just become Schwarzenegger? What was that?
Every once in a while, we do some Schwarzenegger here around Pro Show. I feel like
you've
been doing this, too. It's really a bit with Antonio Mazzaro that I'm offloading onto you. But yeah, stick around, Josh.
Remember when I told you I'd kill you last?
I lied. All right, so here we are, episode 7 of Daredevil. I am Josh Wigler. This is, of course, Kevin Mahadeo. How are you doing today, Kevin?
I'm doing all right.
Doing better now that we are talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger within the first 60 seconds of this podcast.
I mean, when can you not be good about talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger?
It's usually a pretty good time.
Yeah, I was just watching Predator yesterday, I think it was. It was pretty great. I love that movie.
It's a great movie. Great movie. Yeah. But we're also, we don't want to get too hung up on Arnold. We should talk about some other heroes, namely yes. Matt Murdock and his mentor, Stick, played by Scott Glenn, is going to make his Daredevil debut in this episode. Are you a big Scott Glenn guy?
I kind of know him from various stuff, you know. The latest thing I kind of remember him is that he was in Sucker Punch, which is a bad thing to remember him from, mind you.
I'm trying to remember who he was in Sucker Punch. Oh, right.
He was a wise old man. Yeah, who was like just telling them what to do. Yeah,
he's like kindly Stick.
Yeah. Definitely kindly Stick and not current Stick, who's a bit of a dick. Yeah. Stick is a dick.
Stick is a dick for sure. We got this question in, or more of a comment, really, from R. Philly, who wrote in saying, I have minimal knowledge of Daredevil, but I did recall that Stick was his trainer and was looking forward to the episode once I saw the title. Much like the entirety of the show so far, it's blown my expectations away, and I have to ask, how psyched were you guys to see Scott Glenn in the episode? Did you know he had been cast for the role, and if so, for this role specifically? This is yada yada yada. R. Philly is like me, a big fan of this actor. He says, you know, I always love seeing this guy pop up in anything. I agree. We do podcasts of The Leftovers here on Post Show Recaps. Scott Glenn is a main character on that show. He plays a very interesting character on that show as well, a guy with a lot of unexpected wisdom considering his lot in life. So yeah, I'm happy to see Scott Glenn as Stick on this show. But for the non-comics readers, Kevin, can you give a little bit of background on who Stick is and why we should care about this guy?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of got an idea that there's a lot of mystery behind him. They're gonna, I guess, leave for now. And I don't know how much you want me to kind of go into that, but needless to say,
if you think that we are going into the same sort of thing, and if you think it's going to be a really big surprise, maybe let's leave that out. The comics people know the answer. So for people who are not reading the comics, maybe don't give too much away.
Yeah, so I'll try and dial back some of the stuff. Basically, he's this guy who, like, you know, Daredevil's blind, except has been blind from birth, and he's like a martial arts ninja master, and he kind of trains Matt how to hone and use his skills to combat evil. And he kind of means evil in the literal sense, as we'll kind of see. I assume we'll see, so to speak, in the show about a blind guy. Uh-huh. But so he trains Matt. He's very tough. Like, kind of how you see him in that show is how he is. He doesn't, I don't want to say he's like a Jedi, because Jedi's are not assholes all the time, but he does have that, like, we shouldn't
look at you talking about Jedi's on Star Wars Celebration Day.
Haha, I saw the trailer, it was great.
So did the entire world.
Yeah, but yeah, he's you know, he believes in not having too much connection and emotion, because that can be a weakness, and when you fight the things that they are going to fight in battle, it's sort of like, in his mind, it's better to be that way, to not be connected to your comrades, to your allies, and to be emotionless, because that way you will beat the bad guys better, because they don't have anything over you. They can't exploit a weakness if you don't have any.
Yeah. So when we first see him, I don't know if he's battling evil, but he's battling a guy who is obviously scared shitless.
Yes.
This guy who's just running through the stairwell. I love how the camera's just like following him down the stairwell. And we're in Japan, and this guy, he goes to get a gun, and he tries to shoot whoever is in the elevator, but no one's there. And in walks Stick. Stick cuts the guy's hand off. He says, you have three limbs left and some appendages that no man wants to lose. And he's asking, Where is the Black Sky? It's on a ship headed to New York City. It's sworn upon this guy's family. He says, upon my family. And Stick says, they're better off without you. And he cuts his head off.
Yeah, he straight up murders the guy.
Yeah, how about that for an impression? And it's interesting because if this is the guy who was Matt Murdock's mentor, there is one lesson that obviously immediately did not wait for it stick with Matt. it didn't land with Matt that, you know, you can kill. Obviously Stick has no problem crossing that line.
Yeah, Stick definitely. I mean, as we see, it'll be a bit of an argument between the two that Stick has no qualms about killing people. That's what you have to do in war, as he says later on. I believe that, you know, in war there are casualties. But Matt obviously is very, very against that from what we've seen. Matt doesn't like to kill. And I think this is becoming actually a pretty big plot point for him, it seems like, this whole killing thing. We talked about it at the very, very beginning, almost like a, do you think he will? But it's almost becoming like a major issue in this show.
Right. It absolutely is. It's becoming something that's very much on the forefront of this show's mind. And I think, not coincidentally, and again, we've talked about this a lot, and I'm sure we're just going to keep talking about it as this show progresses, but I would predict that it's not going to happen. I don't think that he's going to kill anybody. I think that that's like the defining characteristic of Daredevil that's going to separate him from a guy like Stick, who believes that he's killing for a good cause, but I don't think that we're going to see that come out in Matt.
I mean, normally I would agree with you because that's such a defining characteristic for Matt Murdock. But we saw Superman killed not too long ago.
Fair enough. But, you know, the way that DC handles its live action properties is not the way that Marvel handles its live action properties. I think all due respect to DC, I think that Marvel maybe has a little bit more faith in the source material.
That is a fair point, sir. I will not argue against that.
I don't think it's
from what we've seen, yeah. For sure. The evidence backs that up.
Sure. All right, so let's go to Nelson and Murdock. And they're all kind of making fun of Daredevil right in front of Matt, and it's kind of awkward.
I think you mean the devil of Hell's Kitchen, sir?
The devil of Hell's Kitchen, yeah. Yeah, the dare has been left out. Is this like the Arrow on Arrow instead of calling him Green Arrow? Are we just going to be calling this guy the devil of Hell's Kitchen?
We kind of talked about that, right? Like when they're going to start calling him Daredevil. And I think by the end, we'll get a Daredevil. But for now, it's like the pieces. He hasn't gotten a costume yet. He's, you know, he's slowly getting the pieces of his outfit together, it seems. He had the batons in this one. So for now, the name is Devil. And maybe by the end, it'll be Daredevil. We'll see, I guess.
We'll see. I mean, we're working towards the costume. Maybe we're working towards the name as well. For now, it's not there. And right now in the room, it's an interesting conversation because Foggy is really outwardly against the concept of Daredevil, the devil of Hell's Kitchen. Karen says, you know, like, oh, he's not such a bad guy. Like, don't be so quick to judge. And Matt says, well, whatever this guy's up to, you know, we're going to let the law decide. Like, we would defend him. It would be his right to be defended. And Foggy hates that.
Matt will just defend himself in court. No one will notice.
No one will notice at all. And Foggy is also interested in assembling a softball team for Nelson and Murdock.
What's sad is Daredevil might actually not be that bad.
Yeah, it's true. And look, I mean, we're going to get a question about this later on from Justin Holcomb, who acknowledges what I always acknowledge, that I know nothing about sports, Jon Snow. I am not sports minded, but even I know that you need more than three to field a softball team.
Yeah, but for sure. If anyone hits it into the outfield, it's all over.
Yeah, you need at least like probably five, right? Five people. That seems about legit.
Sure. Let's just go with that. As we both show our lack of real baseball.
No. You got to have like probably seven.
I think it's like nine.
I think it's like between seven and eight.
Yeah, that might be right because you won't need a shortstop, so to speak. So. Yeah.
No, I don't think so. What's a shortstop?
That's a one between Derek Jeter. That's like his thing. He was a shortstop. It's between second and third base.
Who is that? Is that a character that's going to appear on Daredevil? But yeah,
Jon Snow.
You know nothing. But yeah, so we have Karen. Karen's going to leave. She has stuff that she's got to do. Foggy's like trying to like ask her to a thing, but she's like, no, not really. And Matt is kind of making fun of Foggy because it's very clear that Foggy is into Karen. Like no one is surprised by this anymore.
Yeah, but maybe it's me, but did you notice some awkwardness between the two? It's like they went on that date and now it's like super awkward. It's like that awkward moment after it kind of like weird date to begin with.
Well, what's awkward about it is, you know, I think what we were saying last time about how maybe Karen is a little bit more into the Matt thing than the Foggy thing. I do think that that is bearing fruit.
I have a comment about that that happens later in this episode. Sure. So you'll get my rant about that.
Okay, all right. Okay. Take it easy. but yeah, I mean, I think that that's coming up, and I think it's just kind of like she doesn't want to have that talk with him. She's obviously not into him in that way. And you know, that's an awkward conversation to have.
Yeah, which is, I mean, again, we can discuss it more when the moment happens that I'm kind of like, oh, come on, about. But yeah, I guess she's not into him really, which is just, I don't know.
She's just Foggy, not that into you, Foggy.
Yeah, but Foggy's a good guy. I'm on team Coggy.
Of course, of course. But unfortunately, Mlare is not a thing either anymore. Mlare. We're out on Mlare because Matt tells Foggy it didn't work out. His whole, his hot burner cell phone date is gone. And Foggy says, like, you know, man, it's her loss. Seriously, it's her loss. And it's interesting to have that be kind of like the button on this scene, because the whole first half of this scene is spent railing on Daredevil, with Foggy like really just saying this guy Daredevil's the worst. And at the end, he's saying, Matt, you're the best.
Yeah.
If only he knew.
Yeah, I mean, it's two sides, right? Like, to every hero, there's usually two sides, especially if you're holding one of those sides, you know, in the shadow, so to speak, away from like your closest friend. I'm curious what Foggy would think, I guess, if he knew they were the same person. But I mean, he's best friends with Matt. The Matt he knows is a great guy. Also, nice little scene where he's just like, hey, man, her loss. You know, the Moggy fans are getting it right there, too.
Oh, yeah, sure are. Absolutely getting it. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. Let's go to like secret bad guy meeting location where Leland and Nobu are going to have a talk. And Leland has apparently he's moved a lot of money around to help Nobu out with a thing. And it's obviously a very, very big deal. Like some really big shipment is coming in. Something very important to Nobu that we're going to find out later as a kid. Very yeah. curious to get your take on that, by the way. But we have this going on. And Leland's like, you know, I'm not like saying this to threaten you. I'm just saying, like, you know, let's be careful. Like, I'll look out for you. You look out for me. It'll be great. And Nobu not into it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Leland, you know, he's a man who cooks the books, but like Nobu is a no nonsense guy. Like from everything we get from him, he is just kind of stone faced most of the time. And Leland just likes cracking jokes. I feel like, yeah, Nobu's not into Leland in many aspects, just as a person. I don't think their personalities get along.
Right. No, they just don't. They don't mesh very well. Nobu's a very serious guy, as he pointed out, and Leland is a bit of a snarker. So Nobu's just going to turn down that deal outright. And as Leland goes to get into a car, the shoe drops, you know, we've been waiting for this, that Matt is going to confront Leland because he got the name from Vladimir. And, you know, it actually does not go as I expected.
That scene happened and I screamed out, curse you, binging Billy, because a taser came into play. Yeah, he mentioned it.
Binging Billy was cracking up at us when we were saying that the stun gun wasn't going to work out. Stun gun worked.
Yeah, absolutely used it. Absolutely worked out for him. He got away.
And it's all because Stick showed up and screwed things up, screwed with Matt's senses. And obviously Matt has not seen Stick in a very long time, and he's got a lot of feelings towards this guy. So we're going to see Stick show up, and he's going to, you know, be a bit of a stick dick to Matt. And we're going to flash back, as we're going to do throughout this episode, quite a bit. We are going to see how these two met. What do you think of the meeting between Stick and Matt? You know, we can kind of, I think, yada yada through the hospital scene, and really just get to the park, because I think this is pretty interesting stuff.
I really like that park scene, just them discussing. I liked him sniffing out, so to speak, the ice cream.
Yeah.
Testing Matt's abilities of what he can tell about a person just from the other senses that he has, which is really interesting. It's almost like, I mean, you see a lot of these detective shows on TV. Many of them I'm a huge fan of, like Monk, because OCD helps him solve crimes. Psych, his photographic memory helps him and he pretends to be a psychic. So you're almost seeing Matt being able to piece together aspects of people and like how they feel and their feelings and their emotions and how, you know, what's driving them just from other senses beyond sight. It's kind of showing that, you know, us as people, what we see is usually, you know, judging a book by its cover. That's what we do. We see someone and we judge them based on that usually. It's almost instinct. But this is showing just using those other senses beyond sight, you can read so much more about a person than just what you're seeing about them.
Yeah, and he could like talk to dogs.
Yes.
Matt Murdock speaks dog. He like just listens to the dog. He can sense that the dog is hungry and that his stomach is growling. He wants to eat this hot dog that somebody's carrying just upwind of him.
To be fair, guessing what a dog is thinking is like 50% I want to eat that, and like 50% like let's go play.
Well, I feel like this is an argument for Matt getting a dog. Like, I feel like a dog sidekick.
We're back to the dog thing.
I feel like the dog sidekick could be really good for Matt Murdock, because you know dogs are on high alert. If he trains him to really be like a watchdog and like a high alert dog, he will have that dog's like senses are going to be like a first line of defense of like, oh god, trouble's around the corner. Get the daredevil dog.
I see what you're saying, but honestly, like, okay, we know superheroes, and we can discuss this more because there is a line that comes up that actually is reminiscent of a lot of superhero things, but they're reluctant to form like relationships with people because they're afraid that they're going to get hurt. A dog is going to die. Like, it would be the most awful thing to train a dog and have it be like your close friend. And of course, like the bad guy's just going to shoot that dog.
Right.
So that would be just devastating. I don't think that would be a great maneuver. To have like a dog and have it be your friend and he loves you and you throw him into battle against ninjas.
All right. Well, ongoing feud. I think the dog wouldn't be so bad, but I see your point as well. Certainly could happen. This is a brutal show. I could see a dog dying for sure.
Hey, John Wick it though. Then you know,
oh,
then
yeah. Be a whole other thing. And as we talk about dogs possibly dying, Binging Billy is laughing at us because of the big action scene at the vet that's going to take place 3 episodes from now, where all the dogs die. All
dead
dogs
animals die. Everywhere. Oh,
it's terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible. No, that's obviously a lie. No animal cruelty.
I hope so.
No, it's bad. You hope for it, or you hope against?
No, I hope. I hope against it. I don't want to, like, I've had this before where, like, I can see, like, you know, I watch these things and I'm just like, oh man, that's a brutal scene. The Kingpin just, like, smashed the guy's head open with a car.
Right.
But, like, something happens to a dog and I'm just wrecked. I'm devastated.
Yeah, sure. It's terrible. That's always a killer in movies. Like, that just kind of, like, totally, it's a total killjoy. Anything that happens to, like, dogs or kids, I'm always very upset.
Yeah, it's exactly why John Wick works so well. I mean, we just talked about it, but like, exactly. Once that happens, you're just like, yeah, kill all of them, John Wick.
Yeah. By the way, if you're an action movie fan and you haven't checked out John Wick yet, you got to go do that. That is neither here nor there. We also hear Stick saying that he's trying to train him. He's gonna train him for the war. Yes. He needs to give him skills for the war. And when Matt says, what war? Stick says, well, we'll get to that when you're ready. Is there anything you could say about that? Do you have an idea of what he's talking about?
Because I know exactly what he's talking about.
Okay.
But yeah, it's part of the thing where the mystery of Stick, and this is kind of like this episode is all building a mystery that I don't know whether they're going to solve or save it for season 2. It was a weird episode too. Sure. We get like, you know, the backstory on Stick and where, you know, Matt learned his skills from, but it also felt very like offset. I feel from like the rest of the story in a way, like sure, Nobu was involved, but like, we don't see Kingpin. We don't really see a lot of aspects that tie it into the rest of the series. It was almost like this episode existed as a teaser for stuff to come.
Sure. All right. Well, we go back to the present, and Stick he's been gone for 20 years. Apparently, Matt hasn't seen him for that long. We don't know why it's been that long yet. But he's shown up to do something in Hell's Kitchen. We're going to find out about that later. And Matt is all like, I got this place handled. I got Hell's Kitchen handled. And Stick says, yeah, except that Hell's Kitchen hates your guts.
Yeah. Do you have it handled?
Do you have it handled? Yeah, they think you're a crazy person.
Yeah, I mean, he's been framed for a lot of bad stuff. We can see why they are not on his side right now.
Yeah. And here we go to a scene with Karen is meeting up with Ben Urich in some parking lot. The parking lot I feel like Ben Urich always hangs out in. This is like his home. This is his second office, I feel like. But she's complaining, like she's having a hard time, like, you know, following a paper trail. It seems like it's a bust. The Union Allied, whoever owned them, is like divided into tons of different smaller companies. And she says that trying to figure this out is like trying to straighten out a bowl of spaghetti, which does sound difficult.
at first I was confused by that because I'm like, well, you just pull out the one string. But I was like, oh, she means like individually, like pulling all the pieces of spaghetti apart.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty hard.
A bowl of spaghetti.
I was confused. I don't need a lot of spaghetti.
Yeah. Were you thinking like just like dump the bowl out and like grab the whole mass of spaghetti and straighten it out into like one line?
Yeah, like, you know,
sounds fairly easy.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was confused about it. But I guess, oh, separating all the strings. And I get it now. Like, I imagine spaghetti still to be like Lady and the Tramp. It's just one giant long string. And then, you know, the two people just kiss at the end.
That's not how spaghetti normally goes. But it has been known to happen.
to dogs, at least.
It's been known to happen to dogs. So we have, you know, it's once again, she's kind of being questioned by Yorick, like, are you into this? Because, like, you know, the reality of this is, you know, for every expose I've published, a dozen haven't panned out. So this is just the work. It's boring. It's long. It's complicated. Half the time you come up empty. You gotta be ready for this to be a bit of a long shot. And she says, I was a mean three-point shooter on my high school basketball team. I like long shots. And this is where Justin Holcomb wrote in, just to make sure that we knew what she meant when she said three-pointers. Justin wrote in to say, Josh, as much as I love when you do sports, I feel the need to explain that when Karen tells Yorick that she was a mean three-point shooter on her high school basketball team, she meant that she was good at putting the ball in the hoop from a distance designated on the court by a line that made the shot worth 3 points. Hopefully this helps. I'd hate for you to have to look it up like you did in Cut Man. So I appreciate that, Justin. You're saving us some time. I wish that he had said, like, just to clarify, like, does she like scream anything afterwards? Don't you have to say goal when you get a goal in sports?
Yes. Every time you have to you do something, you have to scream goal or touchdown. You have to scream touchdown, okay, or they take it away from you.
All right. So touchdown for you, Justin. You did great explaining basketball to me. Good stuff. Very, very good stuff. What do you think of the partnership between Karen and Yorick here so far?
I mean, I'm enjoying it. It's a weird dynamic. I don't want to say it's like father-daughter, but it kind of feels that way.
A little bit. It's a little paternal, I think.
Yeah, you're getting that vibe, and so am I think that, like, you know, that's the relationship they're building, which is good, because, like, in this show, there's not a lot of that. Like, Matt's dad died, and this whole stick storyline is, like, this weird paternal thing that does not work out in Matt's favor. So it's kind of good to see, like, a father-daughter, you know, father's... offspring, whatever situation, like, work out really well.
Yeah, for sure.
More or less for now. Like, he, you know, he's trying to watch out for her, he's trying to protect her and try and teach her the ropes, which is, you know, that it's true. Journalism isn't always the most funnest job in the world. Sometimes you can get a boring story and sometimes you get stories that just don't pan out to anything.
For sure, for sure. So let's talk about a bad paternal relationship. Let's go to Matt's apartment. Stick, not impressed.
Well, yeah, Stick thinks he has too many possessions, which is bananas because he doesn't have that many things.
He doesn't have a lot. You know, he's got blankets. He's got like nice sheets, apparently, which is, you know, I'm feeling good about that. Silk sheets. That sounds comfortable. Cotton feels like sandpaper.
Which makes sense to him. Like that. Like, I didn't think about that. But because of his powers, like, cotton would feel so uncomfortable against his skin.
Yeah, it would feel horrible.
Silk sheets, though, must be like a dream.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's got to feel great. And like, if your touch is already sensitive, it's got to feel real good.
Let me tell you, I went and upgraded sheets recently where I used to get the regular like thread counts or whatever. And they were like, OK, because they were cheaper. And me and my girlfriend invested and got one of those like microfibers, whatever they're called. Oh, my God. The vast difference is fantastic. So I can only imagine what silk sheets would feel like for someone like Matt Murdock, who has those like powers of feel.
Just be careful, because those silk sheets, they're going to choke you to death someday.
Oh, yeah. So I hear. That's true. That's how I die, you know.
Hey, you're supposed to be a warrior, Kevin.
Yeah. What was her name? Maggie the Frog Lady in the Swamp told me.
Oh,
that,
is that right?
Happens.
That's where you heard that?
Strangled by my sheets.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, you know, in all seriousness, Stick is not impressed, does not like all of this, all of these possessions, does not care for his beer either, this German piss that he's drinking. not a fan of that. Doesn't like that he has a job, doesn't like that he has friends, even though he only has two friends. He says, get rid of them. Get rid of the two friends. Get rid of those people.
This is kind of like what I was, like we were trying to hit on a little earlier, where It's not exactly like Jedi's, but Jedi's definitely, you know, they say love is dangerous and having emotions can be dangerous. But really what Sick is saying is not that far off from how a lot of superheroes act. A lot of superheroes have that, like, what's the line? Sick says, your loved ones will suffer and you will die.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's kind of like superheroes don't usually, there's always this drama about, I can't be with this person because it puts them in danger. And like, Matt's kind of fighting against that notion, but like almost every superhero kind of like, goes to that trope. So really what Stick is saying is not completely far off of how superheroes act normally.
Correct. Totally true. So yeah, I mean, like what he's saying, I hear it, but at the same time, Matt's a person. He's a feeling person. That's part of the reason why he is a hero. It's because he has empathy. He has compassion. That's why he's doing what he's doing, is because he doesn't want to see this city get torn to shit. And that's something that Stick does not seem to have, you know, even if Stick, and I don't know, I mean, I don't really know this guy very well yet. We're not supposed to, unless you've read all of the Daredevil comics and everything. But so far, he doesn't, you know, necessarily seem like the nicest guy in the room, especially when he's making fun of Matt's dad. He says, born to lose, battling Jack, at least your daddy got paid when he hit the floor.
That's not nice.
That's not cool, man.
No, it really isn't. And he is, you know, it's like they're both fighting battles, but they're fighting a different battle. Like, I think what you're saying definitely rings true, that Matt is doing this because he has empathy, because he cares about the city and, you know, he feels for the people. What Stick is fighting for is not that. He's not fighting to help people. He's fighting for something else entirely.
Right. So Matt takes a swing at him and he winds up in this position that I guess he's always getting into with Stick, where like Stick grabs his arm and twists and Matt cannot get out of it. So even though like Stick is like 1,000 years old, at this point, he's very old. I wonder how
he's old. A very old man.
Very old guy. Is he a very old guy in the comics?
Oh yes, very much so.
Yeah. So he's an old dude here on the show, and even you know, in the flashbacks, which I guess are 20 years ago, he's a pretty old guy there. So I can only imagine how old he is in the present. But we're gonna do another flashback, and we're gonna see Matt training with Stick, and he's gonna say, you know, he's like, let me go, get me out of this, and Stick says, make me stop. Matt says, I can't, and then Stick says, then quit. And Matt belts out, Murdoch's never quit, which to me was totally like a Goonies.
Murdoch's never quit.
Yeah, Goonies never say die. He's a never say die kid.
Yeah, I mean, superheroes shouldn't quit. I feel like that's a good mentality to have.
Right. It rings true from an early age with this guy. Like, it's just, this is the way he is. He does not give in. He does not give up.
Yeah, and I think that's a helpful thing to have when you're fighting against an entire city. Like, when you, like most people, I feel like once they see what they're against, especially right now, we talked about how in the second act is usually when we see our hero, you know, at his lowest and beaten down. He's being framed for all these murders. The city is against him. You know, he's being beaten up by numerous people. So a normal person would have quit a long time ago. So this is part of the thing that built up his character. And it started from when he was a kid. And it's almost like, I don't want to say you're born with it, but it's a lesson he learned, I think, through his dad and through what happened. You know, he learned that you can't give up. You can't quit.
Yeah. So Stick and Matt are going to start fighting here again. They're going to keep training. And Stick's going to start talking to him and like telling him to do stuff. And I don't know if it was just me. It's very possible that it was just me, but I thought he kind of sounded like Bane here.
Which line?
You know, we've already talked about Bane on the Daredevil shows, and maybe that was why it was just like subconsciously in my head already. But as he's saying, like, feel the breeze. You've got heart, kid, but heart is not enough. You've got to control that rage.
I did not catch that, but I want to rewatch
rage
it now.
Rage is a wildfire out of control, therefore useless.
Matthew, you must learn to fight better.
Yeah. Make me stop. Yeah, he just kind of sounded like Bane to me. Like, there's just a little bit of a Bane thing. Anger is a spark.
Yeah. Are you sure you just don't hear Bane everywhere? I mean, that voice is pretty spectacular, Mark.
That's my thing. Is like I can see, I can see, I can taste, I can touch, I can smell. My problem is my hearing is that I just hear everybody as a Bane voice.
Which I'm not too sure how that's going to help you be a superhero.
Well, I'm not trying to be. I'd be a terrible superhero. We've established that I'm more Foggy than Matt Murdock, for sure.
This is true. Does that make me Matt, then? Do I have to be the Matt Murdock to your Foggy Nelson?
No, I think we're dual Foggies. The two-headed Foggy.
That seems about right. Yeah.
Double-headed Foggy, for sure. But no, I kind of heard some Bane there. I feel like in Stick's dialogue, he just sounds like Bane to me.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta rewatch that.
You know, in that scene specifically, like, he sounded like Bane, and now, like, I start paying attention to everything he says, and, like, his dialogue, I just think about in Bane voice now. It's just, like, you could just see, like, Bane playing this character.
Bane specifically, or,
Not Tom Hardy. Bane. Bane had to go and get a job to pay the bills, and he got a role on Daredevil as Stick.
Yeah, I mean, tough times, right? Working for the other company now.
Yeah, exactly. But in the present, Matt is able to get out of the twist. It took him 20 years to figure out that trick. That's great.
In a very cool flip way. I was just like, oh, that's impressive.
Yeah. So we're gonna drink some of that German piss beer, and we're gonna talk a little bit about where has Stick been. He's been all over the place. Right around these days, he has been looking into the Japanese mostly, and he is investigating Nobu. Although Nobu is not always this guy's name. This guy goes by a lot of names.
Yeah, which was interesting because, like, I mean, we talked about the hint is that he might be part of the Hand organization, which could be the case.
Is this a stronger hint towards that, you think?
Yes, I think Stick's involvement definitely hints that, yes, Nobu is part of the Hand or associated with the Hand, just because Stick is there and Stick knows him.
Right. So it turns out that Stick is here because Nobu is getting a weapon sent to him tonight. And the weapon is called the Black Sky. It's a bringer of shadows. It's the kind of weapon you do not want to have in your world. And Nobu is tight with Fisk, and Stick is saying, come help me take this guy out. How awesome would it be if, you know, how, you know, Wilson Fisk will be afraid of you because he will have the taste of fear in his mouth after he knows that you have kicked the guy he's afraid of right in the nuts. So two things there. One is it seems that Fisk is afraid of Nobu. That's interesting, at least in Stick's perspective. And then the other thing is this Black Sky, the bringer of shadows, the kind of weapon you don't want in your world. Knowing what we're going to find out later on in the episode, that the Black Sky is a kid. What the hell?
I'm not sure. I was actually trying to wonder what was going on with this as well. The term Black Sky doesn't ring any bells to me as far as the comic books go. But there is precedent of dangerous kids in comics. I mean, you know, kids who have just more power than they know what to do with or can control.
Shazam?
And that can usually. No, he's all right. He's all good. Well, there was like that X-Force storyline recently where Apocalypse was reborn as a kid, and that's like a really powerful, you know, he could grow up to be the most dangerous threat in the world. Looper had this idea of a kid who had extreme power and he, you know, couldn't control because of his emotions.
Right.
It's a precedent set, sure, but it was very weird because it was very vague on what exactly that kid could do. He actually kind of just, the way he was sitting there, I was like, the Avatar? Like, uh-huh. Yeah, I thought he was Aang from, you know, The Last Airbender. Well, not the M. Night Shyamalan movie, the actual Nick cartoon. Like, he just kind of looked like that to me.
Right. But yeah, we're gonna find out that Stick, he wants Matt's help. Matt is saying that he's fine with that as long as he follows his one rule: you do not kill anybody. And speaking of Schwarzenegger, Stick takes a line straight out of Terminator 2 Judgment Day. He says, I swear I will not kill anybody. But then he adds, pussy.
Yeah, it's a nice little Stick moment as opposed to the, you know, the Terminator moment where he actually shoots a guy and he just goes, he'll live.
Does Stick talk like this in the comics? Is he like this vulgar?
I don't believe he uses those exact words, but yes, he is very gruff. He is very, very mean. He's a crotchety old man.
Grumpy Stick.
Yeah, he's a grumpy stick.
He's a stick dick. All right, so let's go to Miss C's apartment. Karen is going to show up, and this is where you want to get your rant in, right? Because Miss C is talking about how you're working a case with the handsome lawyer. She's like, yeah, Matt. And she says, no, Senor Foggy. You don't think Foggy is handsome? What's the problem? Senor Foggy Law is not your type. And Karen's like, that's awkward.
Yeah, look, here's the thing. Like, I mean, like, for me, I was just like, damn it, Karen. And I get it. But right now, in my opinion, watching this show, it's purely physical for her. And like, it's kind of not frustrating, but it's almost one of those things where she gets starry eyed over Matt. And I get it. Charlie Cox is a handsome man.
Handsome.
He's very physically. You have a crush on him.
Yeah.
But like, their interactions comparatively are almost nil. Like, they barely interact with each other from what we've seen in the show. He's too busy running around doing his Daredevil stuff half the time. He's been hanging around with Claire. Like, her entire attraction seems to stem from he's pretty, which, fine, that's how Thor worked. I mean, as far as I, like, in, when I watched Thor, like, the whole, people complained about the, you know, the relationship with Jane Foster and Thor and that. But really, I feel like, yeah, like, it's almost physical because, like, he's a very handsome Norse god. And she was like, oh, hey, what's up?
Totally. Part of me thinks that the relationship between Thor and Jane Foster in those movies is only physical. It's, like, only sexual, where she's just like, he is so hot.
I mean, that's all we kind of got in the first one. Sure,
he's kind of dumb and he's very weird, but he is so hot.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that there's an element of that here between Karen and Matt, where she is just really attracted to him on a physical level. But I wouldn't be so quick to downplay like that night that she spent in his apartment where she was terrified for her life. And he was, you know, really opening up to her, and she was able to open up to him. And it was kind of a very meaningful conversation. So I don't think it's purely physical. I don't.
I mean, sure.
I think that, you know, there is such a thing as like one intense encounter that's just going to stick with you. I said stick. And I think that there's definitely something to that. And, you know, I think that it's probably mostly physical, but I think that there is some degree of a deeper connection.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure that, you know, they did interact and there was that moment. But like, he had those moments with Claire for sure. He spent longer with Claire having those like intimate moments of tense situations and danger and life threateningness. And she certainly, I mean, again, I'm not saying like, come on, Karen, like Foggy. If you're not attracted to someone, you're not attracted to someone. I get that. But she had that moment with Foggy, you know, like even before, like that they have these moments together. They have these emotional moments when the explosion happened. So I just feel like, I don't know. It's just weird to me that it came out of like her, like it's puppy love, you know, and like she's all in on it almost. And I'm kind of like,
know that Matt understands and speaks puppy love.
Yes, it is accurate. He knows exactly how to talk to puppies. I don't know. I just wish that the show would show them interacting more, and then I could buy a relationship between them happening.
I don't disagree.
Now it's all on her part, it feels like, because Matt's too busy doing his own thing. But like, if they all of a sudden are like, now we're dating, I'd be like, based on what?
Yeah, they need to, if they're trying to get Karen and Matt together, they have some work to do.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have too much of a relationship. As intense as that night was, you know, the work that has been put into Karen on any sort of romance plot has been with Foggy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't necessarily think that we need a romance to go anywhere with either of them. But if it's going anywhere with Matt, you're 100% right. She hasn't had a ton of scenes with him. The show needs to service that before we go anywhere near that.
Yeah, and that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying like, you know, trying to do this whole like she should date Foggy.
No, of course not.
But like, yeah, if she's not attracting, that's fine. Just if they try to throw Matt and Karen at us, it's like you need to work a little bit more on that.
I agree completely. Speaking of working, Karen says that she's working to find the guys who have been terrorizing Miss C and all of her neighbors and everything. And she gets some information on like Tully's bruisers. There's like a bald guy and this guy with a badass tattoo that goes up to his neck. And Karen says like, don't worry about those guys. They should be worried. We're going to have their dicks in a vice, which is very strong language.
It is, especially for poor Mrs. C. She's elderly. She's religious. She doesn't talk like that. You know, that's like talking to your grandmother that way.
No, you never do that.
Yeah, absolutely not.
I mean, my grandmothers are no longer with me, but that would not have been something that I would say around them.
Yeah, it's just, you know, there's certain things. I can drink as a 6-year-old, but I can't say that's my grandmother.
Was she drinking with you?
No, my grandmother does not. Wait, maybe she does. I don't know. She hides it from us if she does.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that sounds dark. Listen, that's not me to sound dark.
If you were drinking as a 6-year-old, I think that is still stranger than your grandma drinking now.
That's accurate. That's fair.
That's fair.
I was not drinking as a 6-year-old, though, just to clarify this.
Yeah. I think you were. You can't walk it back. But outside of the apartment, Karen's going to go outside. She has, you know, these two people that she is going to try and track down, but they are going to track her down first. She's going to get attacked by the bald guy and the tattooed guy, and it's not looking very good for her. But then Foggy shows up, and I believe the term is he fungos them. Is that right?
Is that what he said when he hits him with the baseball?
I don't know if that's what he said, but I believe that it's a fungoing, right? Isn't that when like you throw the ball in the air and you hit the ball yourself?
Is that what that's called?
I think so.
Wow. Okay. News to me.
Unless it's a fungo bat. It's a specific type of bat. Yeah, I think fungoing is a thing.
Okay, well, I've never did that, really.
This is me authentically trying to do a sports. So so if you're listening to this, if I'm getting it wrong or if I'm even close to right, please tell me one way or the other. I feel like I'm close to right. I don't think I'm entirely right. I think it's a fungo.
This could be your proudest sports moment.
Or it could just be really embarrassing. It could go either way.
This is it. This is where it all turns around for you or just falls apart.
Just plummets. Just plummets. Yeah. I will never do a sports. Even though I'm doing pretty well in my fantasy baseball league right now.
Are you?
I actually am.
Is it baseball season? Yeah, I knew that. I knew there was baseball
going on. It is baseball season. I'm doing all right.
Yeah, well, okay. I don't participate in this thing.
I've got Adrian Gonzalez. He's sick.
I don't know what that is.
I kind of know what that is. He's a first baseman.
Oh, look at that. We're all learning things. You learned about Derek Jeter. I learned about, you know, the first baseman whose name I just forgot. Yeah.
I don't know many of the other people on my team, but they're all doing great.
Well, good luck, sir.
Things are going well. And Fungo Foggy just coming here and kicking some ass. I see why he wants to put the softball team together. He's pretty good.
Yeah. And, you know, but I will say this, you know, Karen says she can handle herself. And I think she's, you know, she was doing okay. She did get free of the first guy. You know, it's just that the other guy, you know, smacked her in the back, which 2-1 is an unfair fight. But she was doing okay. It's kind of like what we see. Karen, you know, can handle herself pretty okay. And I love that, you know, as she's yelling at Foggy, she just like maces a guy in the face, like in the mid conversation.
Yeah, no problem.
Just goes back to talking.
No problem. Also a little awkward when she realizes that Foggy has been following her.
Right. Which, yeah, not great on Foggy's part, but he was concerned for her because she was acting weird. And in a way, if he didn't show up, who knows what would have happened, I guess. And I don't know. That's going to be a debate of whether or not that was creepy or just him being a concerned friend. Because, sure. You know, we've all been there for concern with someone before. And we know they're in, you know, they may be doing bad things. We want to make sure they're OK.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to the docks. There's a dozen heartbeats out there. One is stronger, different from everybody else. That's Nobu. They've got MP7s with suppressors. This is all stuff that Matt is just sensing. So Stick has taught him how to do all of this. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, Stick taught him how to hone his gifts and skills. He's almost like the Charles Xavier to Matt Murdock's uncanny mutantness.
That's good. I like that. Our Philly will appreciate that as well. I believe our Philly is a big X-Men fan.
Oh, yeah. We get along. I'm a huge X-Men fan.
Yeah, and so we're going to have this big action scene. Matt, he's using sticks here, correct?
Well, yeah, he's using the two baton-like sticks here, which is a Daredevil staple, really. And we kind of talked about whether he would actually use those. And here's where we see him using them. These batons are like part of Daredevil's usual repertoire.
Right. Yeah. Like we've seen him using like kind of commonplace items in this way. Like we've seen him use like gun clips. We've seen him use pipes. We've seen him use things in the same manner that he's using these sticks. But you're right. The batons are kind of iconically Daredevil. We haven't really gotten those on the show. Seems like we're going to have these in the arsenal for a while going forward.
Yeah, it's slowly like how his name is slowly being built. So is his costume, as we're seeing.
It's kind of cool. You know, it's an extended origin story for Daredevil. But at the same time, it starts you right at the drop. So it's not like you have to wait 13 episodes for him to become any kind of vigilante. You just have to wait 13 episodes probably for him to become a great vigilante. He's still working towards that. But even bad Daredevil is pretty good Daredevil.
Oh, for sure. I'm loving it. Like, I like this slow burn aspect. I liked seeing, like, this is his, you know, his first costume and the other pieces slowly come together to become what we know. I mean, we had the hints of, you know, Claire telling him, like, you should invest in body armor. We know she mentioned the red because of the blood. We see him with the batons. Like, we see a lot, like, the aspects coming together slowly. And I think that's kind of cool as opposed to, I'm, you know, I'm 16 year old Peter Parker, and I made this costume with my amazing sewing skills that never was spoken for about before.
Right.
Like, you know, like he just all of a sudden had the Spider-Man costume fully decked out, and it's just like, oh, okay, sure, let's go with that.
Yeah.
I kind of like this idea of like the, you know, even Captain America did it. We saw bits and pieces, like his final costume in Winter Soldier was different from what it started from and stuff like that. I like that. I like seeing a costume come together.
No, it's cool. I love it when a costume comes together. Yeah, so we're going to find out that Black Sky is this kid. Matt is not going to be happy that it's a kid, especially because Stick is trying to assassinate the kid. He's like built a bow and arrow on the spot. Pretty impressive that he's going to be able to aim that from a distance, that Stick, the blind guy, is also going to be an expert marksman from that range. But if not for Matt, you know, this kid would be dead. Although I guess we're going to find out that he's dead anyway, probably.
Yeah, I think he mentions that he kills him.
Yeah, he does. Messed up. totally messed up. Before that, though, we're gonna have another flashback. And this is a very sad thing. This is so Stick and Matt, they're gonna fight one more time. Matt seems like he's really energized this time, and you know, Stick's gonna say, "What rules the body?" you know, we're gonna go through all of that stuff. And Matt is gonna try and like make Stick more than just his mentor. He wants him to be like a dad type, a father figure type. And remember that ice cream that you bought me, Stick, back in the day? I kept the wrapper and I turned it into a friendship bracelet. Would you like it? Do you remember this? He says, I do. And then he crushes it. He crushes the bracelet.
Right in front of his face. I mean, he can't see it, but he heard it for sure. And he knows what just happened, which is just, that's so messed up. That's like if someone gave you, like a kid gave you that like macaroni pitcher thing that people made when they were kids, and you just threw it in the floor and start stomping on it. Like, it's just brutal.
It's brutal. And like, if that's not bad enough, Stick totally just straight up abandons him at this point. He says, your training is over. I can't help you anymore. I expected too much from you.
Yeah, he just pieces out on him, which is just, I mean, it's just mean. It's the Stick dickness to a whole new level.
Peace out, Matt. Yeah,
goodbye.
He bails on him.
Yeah, I mean, Leah, and like, I guess maybe they'll develop it more. I mean, I'm sure this can't be the last we see of Stick. Like I said, I think they're building towards something, which is what makes this episode, again, like kind of strange to me. Because, you know, he runs off. He's clearly planning for something. But like, he abandons this kid, you know, in a time when the kid kind of needed him.
Yeah. But, you know, we're going to get this final fight between Matt and Stick in the present back at Matt's apartment, because Stick is going to reveal, like, you know, that wasn't a child. That thing was not a child. If you'd been focused beyond being a crybaby, you'd sense what the kid really was. But, you know, it doesn't really matter because I caught it with the van while you were, you know, dicking around the docks, and I put an arrow in its heart. And Matt is pissed. You know, we already know that Matt doesn't feel great about the whole killing thing to begin with, but killing kids, that seems like you're really crossing a line with Matt Murdock. And they fight pretty hard. And Matt can't even hit him at first, and Stick is like making fun of him. He's like, you can't even hit an old man. Yeah. And then like Matt ends up doing like this crazy backflip on the stairs, and like you really see in that moment that Stick is an old man. He's basically just saying like, oh, my hip.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he did backflip him into his stairs and smash the floor. Like, yeah, it's a pretty brutal hit for a normal person. For a Stick, I'm sure it was quite painful.
Yeah, quite painful. But even though he's in pain, Stick seems to like this. He says, maybe there's hope for you yet. Nice catching up. Keep the sticks. You're going to need them. And he leaves.
Yeah, bye.
Bye. See ya. So, you know, he didn't accept the ice cream wrapper bracelet, but he did give him a present of his own. He gave him those sticks. I expect we'll see those again. You know, that's kind of Daredevil's thing, as you mentioned. So pretty cool to see him arming up along the way. And speaking of arming up, at the New York Bulletin, the team of Karen and Yurik, they have recruited. They have added a third. Foggy is going to be in the mix. Do you like that Foggy's in the storyline now?
Absolutely. I mean, like, I think the more Foggy, the better. I love, you know, Fulton Reed's portrayal of Foggy Nelson.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. And so I think also for something like this, I know like Ben's like, we got to keep it small. But like, I think for such a big organization, the more people you have in, you know, your your group, the better, because there's so much you have to do and so much you have to investigate. We're basically seeing like a team from The Wire coming together slowly here, from the bulletin board being set up to like all the players coming in and figuring it out. It really feels like The Wire is that's what that storyline is.
So who is everybody?
Oh gosh. Well, clearly,
without Wire spoilers, if you can avoid it.
I'm going to say Ben Urich is probably Freeman, just because he's you know, the devoted...
my favorite character.
Yeah, me too. I love that character. So that's who I probably classify him as. Karen's probably... Man. I don't want to say she's McNulty. If Matt joins the crew, I would say Matt is McNulty.
Yeah, because he
has a personality.
Yeah,
for sure. Man, who would who be? What else you got? Those are two I know I would be able to say. What do you? Who do you think Karen and Foggy would be?
Is Foggy? What is the name of the lawyer? Rhonda?
Oh, that might be possible.
Yeah, Foggy is Rhonda Perlman, who sleeps with McNulty.
Yeah.
So he sleeps with Matt.
There you go. All the Moggy fans, you're very excited now.
That's a very minor Wire spoiler, by the way.
Yeah.
We have some fun with that, everybody. Give us what you think, who lines up with who on The Wire and Daredevil. But yeah, it's cool. Cool that we got Foggy in the mix, and you know, they're kind of looking at the board. You know, there's the king on the board, but now another player is on the field. It's the Jack. It's the man in black. Who is he? It's not Jack Batmat, unfortunately.
Yeah, sadly no Jack Batmat.
It's the Jack playing card. And it's a question of which card is going to trump the other.
Yeah.
Is it going to be the Jack or the King? Normally, the King being the higher suit, you would think would win.
Well, it depends on the game, doesn't it? Like certain games, yeah.
Totally depends on the game. So very interesting stuff there. And we've got one last scene at Maddie's apartment where
a very sad scene.
He still has the rapper bracelet.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so brutal.
It is. Like, it just shows, like, you know, for all six talk, there is a human in there somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere.
There's a real boy in there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm a real boy. All right. But then there's, like, this is, like, the first Marvel moment in a long time, I thought.
Oh, for sure. It so felt like, you know, a post-credits, like, oh, what does it mean?
Yeah. So what does it mean? We get Stick. He shows up in front of this guy who has all of these scars on his back. Stick says, don't worry, Black Sky is no longer a threat. The guy says, well, what about Murdoch? And Stick says, he's stubborn, immature. Still a pain in the ass. The guy says, will he be ready when the doors open? And Stick has no idea. What does this mean? What is happening? Do you have ideas for what is going on?
I do have ideas for what's happening. And I'm gonna, this is what I kind of mean, where I feel like I don't think it's going to build to it this season, but we're definitely seeing hints. I will just say directly, like, this is associated with the hand.
Okay.
And so I think they're really either going to build to a big moment at the end of the season where the hand becomes directly involved, or, you know, it's a tease for season two, which is why I feel like this episode felt kind of weird at parts, but definitely hand related, if I would have to say anything.
Interesting. All right. So we are basically at the end of the episode and at the end of the podcast. So what I'm going to say here is, if you're not interested in knowing details about the Marvel comics, you're safe to shut it off right now. But if you are interested, or if you already know, if you've read the Daredevil stuff before, stick around. And Kevin, what's going on here? Just give us the skinny, the inside scoop.
Well, basically, Stick is part of an organization that is against the hand. Like, he is a member of this group, like a clan that stands in direct opposition against the hand organization. And the hand is kind of it's there's a lot of magic and mysticism involved in them. And they kind of worship like a demon. And so I'm guessing when the doors open is a hint to, like, oh, if the demon becomes free, will he be ready to battle? So that's my guess on what's going on here, because Stick, you know, this group, they're forming an opposition against that group. It actually also ties into Elektra, which would be really interesting to see again, where I feel like season two is a time to, like, bring a lot of that in. So, yeah, that seems like what the hint is being dropped at here. about what they're going to be doing in the future, which would be really cool. And just the fact that this normally doesn't happen in the regular comics, but just the fact that there's mysticism involved in ninjas, it's like maybe they can tie in Iron Fist, they can tie in Doctor Strange. There's a lot that can go on here that's actually, I think, as you said, building toward, it's a very Marvel Universe moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, with this show, it can be easy to forget that this is, you know, taking place in the Marvel Universe. So to have a moment like this where, you know, something like that is opening up, where this possibility of like actual demons being introduced into Daredevil right now with the aesthetic of Daredevil and what the show seems to be concentrating on seems a little far-fetched, but this is also, Daredevil is happening in the same universe where, you know, on the far side of the universe, there's a talking raccoon and tree pirating around with Chris Pratt. So, you know, it's, you know, with Andy Dwyer. So it's a very strange world that this show inhabits. And it'll be interesting to see if it can cross that threshold. I mean, Arrow, just as another example, is a show that started off trying to be fairly realistic, you know, trying not to do anything too exaggerated, too extreme, too comic booky. But by season two, and certainly by season three, it's really dealing all in. And the progression of that felt really natural. I wonder if Daredevil is aiming for the same thing and how they're going to do if they start to go in that direction.
I mean, I think so. And I think what it works and why it kind of worked at Arrow and does so well is that it's a slow burn for people, like for regular everyday, you know, viewers who aren't used to comic book stuff, which is hard to believe when Guardians of the Galaxy made that much money that there are people who would be in opposition to some of this stuff. But like, yeah, I think it's slowly building towards it rather than just throwing all out at once. You know, I'm excited for it, though, as a comic book fan. I'm more accepting, I guess, of things that are not in the realm of realism. Like, I was excited in Arrow when, you know, they hinted at like, oh, yeah, Lazarus Pits, they're a thing. You know, right. I'm very happy about that. So, yeah, you know, I think the slow build and then season two going all in, very similar to Arrow in a way, you know, really grounded in realism in season one, and then season two really started to push the more fantastical elements of that universe.
For sure, for sure. Very interesting stuff. All right, well, let's wrap this one up. Since we are recording this really late on a Thursday night, Kevin and I are actually, we're going to stop recording this podcast. We are going to watch the next episode. We are going to go right ahead and do that. The next episode called Shadows in the Glass, episode 8, and then we're going to record the next episode, the next podcast, so that we can have that up for you guys fairly early on Friday. So hopefully by the time that this is recorded, it's going to be a pretty quick wait period between Stick and Shadows in the Glass. Hopefully not much more than like, you know, an evening. Let's hope for in the morning on Friday, and if not, you can let us know if we're late. But that's what we're aiming for right now. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Kevin, do we have a hashtag, do you think, for today's episode for Stick? I don't think we can give him hashtag Stick Dick.
That would be my suggestion, you know, is hashtag
like,
Stick Dick.
I feel like that's probably taken on Twitter already, and it probably points you in some bad directions. What do you think? Like maybe hashtag Daredevil Dog?
Yeah, Daredevil Dog or Dare Dog is what I'd call him.
All right, Dare Dog or Daredevil Dog. Either way, we'll get what you're saying. Tweet that our way. Tweet that to @KevMahadeo. I'm @RoundHoward. We would love to hear from you guys. Get your questions in. Really great getting questions from you guys throughout this whole thing. At this point, you're not going to be able to get anything in time for episode 8, but definitely write something in for episode 9. If we can get to you by then, that would be great. So hit us up on Twitter or postshowrecaps.com/feedback is another way to do that. And until next time, keep sticking around. We'll be back with another show very soon. Bye, Kevin.
See you soon, Josh.
Bye.